Nighttime on Still Waters. This is NB506812, narrowcasting into the night from somewhere on Britain's waterways. April 27th, Tuesday. This morning, dawned with frost and golden washes of light, I discovered a new patch of cowslips and hawthorns budding, and the first mallow and bugle clusters shouldering their way into the sunlight. It should have been perfect. The birds sang with brilliant clarity, managing to subsume the aural gash of traffic. But it wasn't. Everything felt just a little off kilter. My shoulders and legs ached. Not pain, just an awareness of them being there. So that walking was not an automatic act, but a conscious and deliberative one. Consequently, it felt awkward, clumsy, not natural. And the morning chill lost that exhilarating feel and sank into my bones. A racing mind that gravitates to the dark edges where formless unease lurks. It's not that I was untouched by the world through which I walked, those spots of beauty, touches of joy. But sometimes perfection and beauty lie in the small details, not the whole. Even Eden had its serpent, and et in Arcadia ego, even in Arcadia, there I am. This is the Narrowboat Erica, narrowcasting to you out of the night, canal side. A very warm welcome. Well, tonight there's no moon, and the sky is heavy with clouds. But they're set to clear later and the temperatures are forecast to fall again below zero. And it's a good night to meet up and spend some time together again. Following a very dry spell, the turbulent dance of April showers seems to have at last kicked in. And I know it's a real shame for all those who are finally managing to head out and for those who've got bank holiday plans in their mind. But I have to say that part of me is a little relieved. The ground is rock hard, and the towpath that remained a slippery quagmire for so much of winter has been fissured with cracks that even fairly decent showers have failed to heal. And I get a bit panicky at prolonged spells of dry weather. Droughts worry me. Perhaps more so than hard winters or even pandemics. Maybe it's because I've read too many ancient texts from Mesopotamia and Egypt. I just know that I feel a great sense of relief when I feel the rattle of rain on my skin and sense that sharp smell of rain on hot, dry earth and pavements. And perhaps I just worry too much. Miles Hadfield has already warned us that in the past, April was not always associated with the wet and the showery. And the temperatures are slowly on the rise, but even still our night times are characterized by sub-zero or just above zero temperatures, and stoves are relit to ward off that nighttime chill. But slowly the season's turning, preparing us and all the others who are caught in its cycle for summer. Our two swans continue to play guess with us. Twice this week they've started to build a new nest, and I discover them first thing in the morning, together, trying to squeeze on to the small raft of reeds like a spaniel requisitioning the cat's soft bed. And they hold out until about mid-morning and then push off into the canal, slipping effortlessly into the water with all the elan and panache of a character from Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. Earlier, as I was jotting down some notes, a little family stopped opposite us on the towpath. 3 generations of them, but even the oldest looked far younger than me. And a very young baby is strapped to the chest of the new dad. And both parents were wreathed in smiles, and the grandparents had that glow. And they laughed and gesticulate, and the baby's arms and legs flap like those lollipop stick figures we used to make at school. And then I see why they have stopped. The pen, the female swan, is literally swanning around in front of them. And Mum records the encounter on her phone. And they laugh, and a memory is made. And the swan circles, and a moorhen scuttles away on the bank. And just a moment ago, Donna rushed outside to investigate what sounded like someone trying to lever off the steel plates from our hull. It was one of the swans, having a nighttime snack. And who can blame them? We all need nighttime snacks from time to time. Sadly, none of the ducklings have survived. We suspect it's the Cray twins, the feral domestic ducks, that are to blame. But Betty, and we're pretty sure that it is her, is still sitting on her eggs on the boat next to us. And there's also one further down. Patience is a necessity for a duck in the spring. And the male partners hang around, appearing to be a little at a loss about what to do. And once or twice a day, Betty covers the eggs with a thick blanket of her downy feathers, and the two swim off together to feed and drink, if the Cray twins allow. Earlier this evening, they both came to the duck hatch, appropriately enough, and we fed them duck food. She was ravenous, and interestingly, the drake kept his distance, allowing her to gorge on the floating pellets of food while he pecked at those that floated to the periphery. I'm learning so much about ducks at the moment, especially the sparring in the air. And it doesn't really equate much with the little that I have managed to find to read on duck behaviour, which tends to be irritatingly dismissive and saturated with censure at their sexual behaviour, which, bearing in mind it's been written by humans, is perhaps a little bit rich. And in other news, there's a continuation of movement and goodbyes to friends made over winter. This week we had a session of hair cutting, where we cut each other's hair using Penny's dog clippers, now sporting spring hairdos. And it's also been a week of birthdays of sorts. The first was Penny's. Actually, that was last week, and as she's a rescue dog, we don't have her actual birthday, so the day she came to stay with us, we celebrate. And then it was Donna's and mine. And to celebrate mine, I used some of my birthday coffers to buy myself a rather cool tarp hat. It's made from discarded tarpaulins used by lorries in Brazil. And I'm delighted to find that other listeners are also proud owners of tarp hats. Now, I'm sure we all suspected that Wayne from the NB Wannabes was a man of sartorial elegance and style, but he certainly proved that to be true by posting a photograph of himself wearing a tarp baseball cap. And I totally agree with your comment, Mark Colvin, that actually it is quite difficult to resist buying yet more tarp hats. It was lovely to hear from Jim Morris, who contacted me about the time when he got caught in a squall while he was sailing and managed to run aground on Warish Spit. That's scary stuff, running aground in the narrow boats. Annoying, but at least the flat bottom, you're not going to go anywhere. But running aground when you've got a deep keel of a yacht, that's worrying stuff, Jim. And thank you to Tony Wager for your kind words. And I'm glad you are enjoying the podcasts. And you must tell me how the work at Winkwell is going. Is it still in progress, or have they finished it there? And thank you to everybody who just keeps in contact or just clicks like on the Twitter or Instagram or Facebook page. And it's lovely to know you're there. And it makes this whole thing feel a little bit more two-way rather than just me talking out into the night. And I just also want to just say hello, and that I'm very much with you, Clifford. And I know things are so, so difficult at the moment. But you are not alone, even though it might feel so at the moment. And we will find a way through. Please, please feel free to leave a comment or a like on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. Or if you can, if there is a facility to do so on your podcast platform or podcast provider. A lifetime ago, almost to the day, it turned cooler after an uncustomary warm and dry couple of weeks. Synoptic charts show high pressure moving up the country, dragging with it frontal systems. And no doubt, on that day, some looked at the clouds and grumbled. And life carried on as it had the days before. Engines shunted in sidings. People waited at bus stops. Shop tills rang out. Dogs barked. And in the cabin of a small boat moored on the bank of the Grand Union Canal, I took my first breath of air, sweet with cow pasture and nettles and paraffin. And 8 years ago, long before we'd even discussed living on a boat, I wrote this about that time. I was born into a cathedral of green water and weeds and light. And my small world was bordered by hedges and fields rich with cow dung, and the hollow dark places rank with nettle and dock and damp earth, where archangels and kingcups grew, and I was cradled by the sound of wind among reeds, the rush of glassy water that darkly foamed in the plunging sluices of the locks, whose slick stone walls dripped water and slime into their echoing depths, and the song of swan's wings in flight, and the wash of rain against a wooden cabin roof. And the world smelt of wet wood and anthracite, and the scorched scent of hot iron from the little pither stove that kept the cruel winters at bay and dried the bedclothes when the roof leaked. And then there was the smell of pigs and straw and diesel, oil and paraffin, and that rich, trouty earthiness when still waters are stirred. There were five of us aboard this clinker-built ark called the Cathy, cobbled together from an open-topped lifeboat that had been salvaged from an old liner. The wood was rotten, but it was loved. And the farmer on whose land it was moored kept threatening to break it up, but Mum and Dad just laughed. It was home, and it was a good one. And there was laughter there and warmth, even when the ice came and our world no longer rocked gently to the secret rhythms and movements of the dark canal waters. There was a porthole by our bunks, and Mum made drop scones that sizzled and spat in an old frying pan for friends who had dropped by, and there were always friends dropping by. First there was Mum and Dad, then there was the cat, Kismas, who later would sleep with me on my pram. Then came my sister, Wendy. And finally there was me. At 9:45 on a Friday morning, right at the end of an April that was generally wet. It was the day when the dogs that lounged and guarded the farm were silent. And it was the day I first opened my eyes and saw that the world was not dark, but full of light. The silence of the dogs, the ancient would say, was a portent. I was born in the little cabin made and fitted out by Dad, and Dad and Wendy waited on the canal bank, hoping that the rain would hold off. And Kismas was the first of our family to see me. The midwife picked her up, saying that it was only right that she should see this new creature that had come into her life so that her nose would not be put out of joint. And Dad bought a marble cake to celebrate. Records showed that there was a long-lasting system of low pressure hanging over the country that spring, which made it very wet. And much later, Mum would write in her memoirs, "One of the aspects we enjoyed most about the boat was the feeling of close proximity with the elements, without actually having to go outside. When it rained, we could hear it pattering on the roof, giving a very cozy feeling, and the sight of the raindrops falling onto the water, making patterns, was so much nicer than seeing them fall on cold town pavements. The same with the wind. And when it blew, there was the gentle rocking of the boat with the added chuckling sound of the water against the clinker-built sides. Space was tight. And sometimes of necessity, even in the rain, I would be outside, in the fields by the bank, tucked up in the pram with Kismas on guard sitting underneath it. And later on, once a week, a friend of Mum's who lived in a narrowboat just up from us would row down to collect us in her dinghy. I would be in the carry cot placed in the centre, and then she would row us upstream to where she lived for tea and cake in a spotless, pristine home that was moored around the willowed bend and that smelt of rush matting and oil lamps. I remember her as a busy, impeccably dressed little figure. She wore immaculate trouser suits and painted her toenails cherry red. And later, at school, when we learnt about the Industrial Revolution and the folk who worked on the canal boats, I looked at the pictures in vain for the red toenails and this elegant little woman offering macaroons and iced fancies, arranged on a silver cake stand, as later, when we were older, Wendy and I would perch on the edge of her Urkel chairs with their hectic floral patterns and dazzling white antimacassars. What did I stare at, and what caught my gaze as I lay in that carry cot in the bottom of the dinghy, as the world swayed and creaked past? What captured my mind, young as it was, and my heart in those moments? And do those things still stir me deep within? What pleasures did I feel with the rain brushing the canopy of my pram, safe and cocooned while the elms sighed and the heron flew? Is this why I am still entranced by the sound of rain against window or hood? Is this why I breathe a little deeper at the sight of rings forming on still waters? And is this why I still like to press myself up in the corner where the roof eaves drop on stormy nights and listen? And listen. The cozy warmth of a wooden cabin, the smell of a hot stove, the light that spills from a hurricane lamp, the sound of water lapping against a wooden hull. Moorhens jerkily swimming through green seas of duckweed, gnats dancing low over water, the slow creak of oars complaining in their rullocks. The smell of locks, and the rattle as the winding gear is released, the white fall of water. These are not memories. They're too old to be memories, too forgotten, too lost. Pre-memories. Impressions, stabs of emotion, feelings gauze thin like dreams in the morning's light. But they are somehow still part of me. As strange flashes of recognition that disorientate me and strip me bare. Yes, they are still there. For I hear their songs and hear their owl-like call. Not to an Eden lost, but to an Eden that still, somehow, somewhere, lives on. This is the Narrowboat Erica, signing off for the night, and wishing you a very warm, peaceful, and gentle night. Good night. Temperature outside 6.8 degrees. Inside 24 degrees. Humidity 76%. Dew point 2 degrees. Wind direction north. Wind strength 3 miles per hour. Barometric pressure 1018.6, rising. Cloud cover 90%. Cloud ceiling 40,000 feet. Precipitation 3.1 millimeters. Moon phase 70.7%. Waning gibbous. Day length 14 hours 55 minutes. Sunset 20:31. Sky casting 5:34.